Hi, welcome to the third dsmith.org podcast on high-frequency measurement, troubleshooting, and design. I'm Doug Smith. So you want to be a consultant. Many engineers have thought about it. Some get pushed into it by their employers, and that's to say layoff. I had one friend come to me one time that had happened to, and he said, how do I get into consulting quickly? Because he'd just been laid off. The problem is, I haven't the slightest idea how to do that. You can be the smartest, best engineer in the world, but unless people know you're there and available, you'll starve. And that's the main problem, is how do I get known? How do people know that you're there and available for that kind of work? And we're going to talk about some of the pros and cons of this kind of business over this podcast. And feel free to email me any comments, and I'd be very happy to answer questions if anyone has any. So let's get started. There's two types of consulting. One is where you have a few clients, and you may spend several months with a single client on a particular job. The other kind would be many clients, where you might only spend a couple of days per client per job. So let's talk more about the case of just a few clients. In this mode, we often spend months at a particular a company, and the output is some product, or maybe it's getting a product to pass an EMC test. But there's a definitely well-defined job that extends over a period of time, and sometimes results in a product design which they incorporate into some larger product. Of course, this means there's potential liability. If it doesn't work, or if the test result really wasn't quite what everyone thought it was, can't be reproduced, or the product burns down building somewhere, there's definitely a potential liability there that you have to deal with. And probably means insurance or maybe incorporation. Also, if you've got a few clients that you work a lot with, then if you lose one, it's a big impact on the income. And then you have to find a new client quickly to replace that. On the other hand, you have only need to find a few clients to keep busy. The other case, and this is what I do personally, is the case of having many clients. In this case, I help clients overcome immediate issues. Some design problem, maybe they can't pass an EMI test. And a typical involvement in my case is on the order of 2 days per client. If it's a sticky case or has some problem where physically it's difficult to do the test, it takes time, it might go into a few more days. But typically it's 1 or 2 days per job, and sometimes coupled with the seminar. About half of my business is on the training side, but that's not really consulting. Now, the client is responsible for the design, not you. You're just helping them pass the test, showing them what to do, and it's obvious whether they pass the test by the time you leave, generally, in the case of an EMI test. But they have the ultimate design responsibility, and that lowers your liability quite a bit. Still may want some insurance, but it's a lot lower liability, I think, since you're not the responsible person for the design. Any one client's a small fraction of your business. If you have 100 clients and you lose one, won't make a big difference. So that's a positive. Another issue is that it's easier to handle state and federal governments who are looking around for people who they think are employees, who companies think are contractors. If you work for only one company at a time, that can be a little difficult, saying that you're a contractor, and there's a bunch of guidelines you have to meet. But if you have 200 clients and you spend 2 to 4 days per year per client or something like that, actually, if you have 200 clients and 2 days per client, there aren't that many days in a year. But if you have a lot of clients and you're only spending a few days with them, then it's pretty easy to make the case, much easier. On the other hand, in order to survive, you need hundreds of clients. You need a client list that's 200, 300, 400 clients long, because each one's only going to use you for a couple, sometimes just a couple days a year when they run into something sticky. So that's an important point. And how do I get those clients? That's a major question. Before we get into that, let's look at some basics. I've decided now I want to go and do this, and we'll talk about some of the concerns and advantages in a minute. But some of the basics, I would get a mailbox rather than using your home address. You don't want people showing up on your doorstep. 800 number probably used to be more important than it is now. It does give a look of an established company. Although nowadays, long-distance service is essentially free, and everyone's using cell phones that include the long-distance charges, so it's a little less important, but there's an image thing, and it does help. highly advise get a domain name. Don't have an email address, somebody at yahoo.com or any other domain. Get your own domain name. If it can be your own name, that would be good. But you need your own domain name to give a professional look and to your business. So in addition to that, you probably want a website. In fact, it's almost a given that you want that. You have to have that. And a separate podcast I'm going to cover, because it's out of the reach of a 10-minute podcast. And in a separate one, I'm going to talk about how to make a website that gets rated highly on Google and has nothing to do with all the things people say it does. You know, fiddle around with keywords and stuff. I've made no effort to fiddle around with keywords or play any games or pay anyone any money. And in my field, I'm rated top out of like 14 million websites. And I'm going to share those, the things I did to do that, which I didn't know, by the way, that was going to happen. That was an accident. But looking back, I now know what happened. I know how to duplicate it. And that's a separate podcast. But a website is very important. And I'll also talk about some of the tools for writing that. Okay, let's talk about some concerns that go into the decision about this. Well, one problem is you can't hide from the boss because you are the boss. A friend of mine who worked with me at Auspex Systems, who had been an independent consultant and had gone back to work for just that reason. And the thought is that you feel compelled to work all the time and you can burn out. You do need some time off. I must admit I've worked harder on my own than I have for any employer. I work 365 days a year. Even on vacation, I'll spend a half an hour or so, maybe a little more, checking my email for important things. Because if you miss an email from a job that needs to be done soon, client's got an immediate problem, you miss that income. So you got to do at least a little work every single day. There's no such thing as complete vacation. And it can burn you out. So just remember, you can't hide from the boss. You're it. Which, again, leads to problems separating personal and business life. Some people think it's a good idea to have a separate location for your business out of the house. I don't do that. My office is one of the rooms in the house. I just don't want to shell out the money for a place of business just so I can go sit somewhere else. And it has the advantage that I can come in here for and do 10 minutes of work if I've got a little 10-minute segment. The thing to remind yourself is that you work every day, but you only get paid for a fraction of the time. So that's an important consideration. And at this point, I probably should mention about what it takes to get paid. Or what should I say, what you need to charge people. In order to break even with what you're making as an engineer's salary now, you need to charge a minimum of four, more likely five times your salary on a daily basis. So if you make X, you need to charge 5X on a daily basis, plus any travel expenses added to that. And then if you have a reasonable level of business, you'll about break even. If you sell every day, you'll be ahead, but you can't do that. Your clients will be mad if you do because you won't be available in the short term for emergencies, and you will end up in the hospital. So what's the reasons for some of this? You got to buy all your own computers, all your own benefits. No one pays you for diddling with your computers to get them to work. You only get paid when you're on a customer site. And at the very most, at half the time, more like a quarter of the time, you can be on a customer site. There's a tremendous amount of overhead that you have to deal with. And it works out. It turns out the cost of an engineer to a company is $1,000 or more dollars per day, every day that engineer is there. That's part goes into the IT department, the HR department, everything that supports an engineer, that lab space, all the lab equipment, your office space, salary benefits, government paperwork. It all adds up to more than $1,000 a day for the average engineer. And in my own case, if you take the total expenses divided by the total work time, it's comparable to that. And you will find that to be the case if you start in this. So be sure you don't underestimate what your fee needs to be to break even. Okay, so... sickness and disability are especially an issue. Of course, disability insurance is just way too expensive to buy. So if you get sick, you don't get paid. The other problem is there's a reliability issue. If you just think over the last year, if you've had to modify your schedule more than twice in the last year because of sickness, say a flu or a cold or something, you might want to think twice about it because that means you're going to be canceling non-refundable airplane tickets. You're going to make customers inconvenience. And if they've got a real problem, they have to go to someone else. And once they do that, they may not ever come back because they found another person that's good. You have to be almost 100% reliable. And even if you don't feel good, you go. Unless you're on the verge of entering the hospital. So the state of health is very important in this business. Another concern is income is not constant or guaranteed. You don't necessarily know where the next week, month of income is coming from. On the other hand, there's lots of benefits to being in business for yourself. I don't need to mention to you the tax benefits. People write about that all the time and talk about it. And there are lots of tax benefits that you can use. But past that, freedom to manage time. When my son was in middle school, if I were home, for the day that I was home, I would walk over there about 2:15 and pick him up and walk home again. It was nice. I never had a chance to do that when I was working at a company. On the other hand, of course, I may find myself at 10 o'clock on Sunday night typing away on the computer. But still, there's quite a bit of flexibility. There's no fixed upper limit on your income. The harder you work, the more you make. It's not like a job where you're going to make no more than a certain amount. That's your salary and that's it. And in many companies, that salary levels off. So if you're 50 years old and you're looking at your salary, it's probably never going to be much greater than what it is now, especially when inflation is considered. So that's nice. Know that there is no upper limit. You may not make a whole lot more than you would have made as an employee, but at least there's no upper limit. There's something psychological about that that's good. Of course, there is a lower limit. You could go down to zero. But again, this could be an advantage. I know many people who lost their jobs around 2000, 2001 in the big recession that we had then. People who worked for themselves, often the income went down, but it didn't go to zero. Maybe it went to two-thirds of what it was. And that's more manageable than going to zero. I don't know if this would be an advantage or not, but no one else to blame for the mistakes. There's no upper management to complain about how the company's being run. If there's something wrong, you're responsible for it. And, of course, it's a reduction in the number of bosses. If you're single, you probably have one boss at work right now. If you're married, you have two, one at home, one at work. By working for yourself, you reduce the number of bosses by one, and to some extent that can make life easier. But in the end, it's a personal decision. Some people like working this way, and others prefer the security of a salary with a minimum income and benefits and so forth. And it's really a personal decision. It's not for everyone, but for those who choose to go this way, it can be very rewarding. Well, thanks for listening to my podcast. The next one will be coming along in a few days. And feel free to send me at doug@dsmith.org any suggestions, topics, format suggestions, or if you'd like to be interviewed on this podcast, we can do that too. Again, thanks for listening.